Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
When I do die, I'm going to be thrown overboard so the lobsters can eat me, because I've killed so many lobsters in my life. And since I'm growing my own fatty liver, I think the lobsters would like me.
HeritageRadioNetwork.org presents Evolutionaries, Lydia Shire. Lydia Shire is the enduring culinary talent behind some of Boston's most celebrated restaurants. She's universally acclaimed, having won a James Beard Award for Best Chef Northeast and the Woman Chefs and Restaurateurs 2011 Golden Whisk Award. She's known for her use of fat and offal and her exuberant personality in the kitchen. Lydia grew up in Brookline, Massachusetts, and fell in love with food at a young age.
Both my parents were fashion illustrators and artists. My father was a great cook. You know, he was Irish, and you know what they say about the Irish, they're not the best cooks, but there's always exceptions to the rule. And he would cut out recipes from the New York Times, and, you know, I'd come home from school, and when he would get home, all of a sudden these beautiful smells would be coming from the kitchen. You know, he would cook chicken legs with sherry and mushrooms, and there's nothing like the smell of sherry that goes through your house, you know, with chicken cooking. And all my friends always wanted to have dinner at my house, you know, so I grew up in Brookline, right in Coolidge Corner, so we always had a ton of people over for dinner. You know, at 4 years old and five, I was chopping fresh garlic for spaghetti alle olli with my father's cleaver. And he didn't have a French chef knife, so he exposed me to it very early, and I just kind of, that's what I love.
Lydia's first professional cooking position was garde-manger at Maison Robert. She landed the job in a very creative way.
What I did was I made a 9-layer cake, very thin layers with French buttercream. Raymond Oliver's cake in one of his books, and I took it on my job interview. And, you know, that was kind of unusual back then. I mean, people don't usually show up at an interview with, you know, a cake. And I had to order an air-conditioned cab because of the buttercream, because it was a sweltering day in July when I went for this interview. And I think they were just basically impressed that I went to that trouble. And that is sort of a lesson in life, isn't it? Because if you want something badly, you have to set yourself apart. So I got the job, and, you know, but they stuck me in garde-manger, and, you know, I wasn't crazy about that. I wanted to cook.
Lydia left Maison Robert to attend culinary school in London in 1971, which sparked her love affair with Euro cuisine, cream, butter, fat, salt, and most importantly, meat. Upon coming home, she returned to Maison Robert, this time becoming head chef.
I went back to Maison Robert. You know, they started me right at the bottom. I was on the grill, and then I moved to sauté, and then I went upstairs to the fancy dining room. Then I became the chef up there, and that was back in the 70s. There were, I would say, probably no other women chefs who were entrusted with a French dining room. But, you know, I've always worked really hard, and time means nothing to me. I would get there early in the morning and stay late at night, and, you know, it was just what I had to do. I remember when I worked at Maison Robert, Lucien Robert was the owner, and he used to go down to the meat market and buy these beautiful whole lamb, baby lamb, And, you know, they were from New England. And that was, I mean, some people could say that was the dark ages of cooking in America, but he was filling his sob with carcasses of lamb. In the summer, his wife, Anne Robert, would bring home choke cherries from Minnesota, and we would make homemade choke cherry sorbet, which is the best sorbet I've ever had in my whole life. And, you know, we were doing seasonal foods back then. I think the difference is we didn't have the writers who are writing about it. You know, there wasn't quite as much interest for the average American about what was really going on in restaurants. So, you know, that's changed a lot.
While working as head chef at Maison Robert, Lydia was introduced to Julia Child, who frequently ate at the restaurant. The two went on to form a friendship that would end up landing Lydia her next job as chef at Harvest Restaurant in Cambridge.
Julia did one thing that you should know about, and I think that this was probably her most beautiful attribute. I mean, obviously we know she was a great cook and a great writer, but she loved getting people together. And I'll never forget, I had a phone call from her one day. I was at Maison Robert, and she said, "Lydia, would you come over for lunch tomorrow?" Of course, you don't say no to Julia. So I did, and I walked up to her back pathway to her kitchen door at her house in Cambridge, and I could smell the most beautiful smell coming from the kitchen. She had made a Roquefort Jalousie tart with puff pastry, so all I could smell was this butter and this Roquefort cheese coming out of that back door, and it was just amazing. And when I walked up to the door and knocked and she let me in, her husband Paul was there, and another young girl was there. And this young girl was thinking about becoming a cook. So Julia had this lunch just to introduce me to this young girl. And, you know, Julia so often would open her home to get people together to meet each other. So that was such the unselfish part of Julia, where she just wanted to be a conduit for people. It wasn't about herself. It wasn't her glorifying herself. She just wasn't like that. And I went to visit her in Place Cassière, her home in France, and she asked me to make a help her with a leg of lamb and make the sauce. And I remember my knees were shaking. And in fact, that day when she made the Roquefort Jalousie tart, she asked me to make a dressing for her salad. And again, my knees were shaking because, you know, you were in front of Julia Child. I was offered a job. You know, that was the job that Julia got for me at the Harvest Restaurant in Cambridge. And it was my first full-fledged chef job, you know, where I did everything. I did all the ordering, hiring, writing the menus, cooking on the line. The buck stopped with me for that job. And I would say I failed in that job. You know, I was there for 9 months, and I really don't think I did a very good job. I did a great job cooking, but I did not do a good job managing. And that taught me a lesson. When I left there, I knew I had to change my ways and take on a much stronger role in working with people. Because at the end of the day, cooking is the fun part of our job, but managing people is difficult at times. After the Harvest, I went to the Copley Plaza Hotel, and I was the chef of the fancy dining room there, Cafe Plaza. And Alan Tremaine, the owner of the hotel, had me go down to Rhode Island and open La Pogée at the Biltmore in Rhode Island. So I did, and I was the chef there of the fancy dining room. And Jasper walked in one day from California, and he was hired as a night chef. So he wasn't happy there, and I actually sent him, and he took my old job at the Cafe Plaza. I'm a little older than Jasper, but we became just best friends. And, you know, he went on and opened his own restaurant. We opened the Bostonian Hotel together, and that was very special. You know, that was an all-American wine list and really all-American food. That was really a great time in my life. You know, when you think of hotels, you know, if you blink your eyes and think back to the 80s, 70s, late 70s, you always kind of could imagine a French restaurant being the headline restaurant in a hotel. And Frank Fisher and Richard Palmer, who were running the Bostonian Hotel, which is right in the middle of Boston, it's right in Faneuil Hall, they wanted something different, and they wanted a new approach. And Richard Palmer, who was from England, said, "No, I'm having an all-American wine list." And I even thought he was crazy because I'm such a lover of Burgundies. But, you know, he did, and we got rave reviews for it, and we headed the food in the same direction. It wasn't so much to cook a Dover sole with Meunier and something French with it, but we wanted to showcase American food. So we had Johnny Cakes on the menu with crab and things that were definitely more New England. The Four Seasons hired me to open the Four Seasons Hotel in Beverly Hills. And I was the first woman to open a hotel in the Four Seasons group. That was very exciting. That was a great time in my life. I took two other chefs with me, both women, Susan Regis, who worked for me ultimately for 19 years, and Leslie Mackey, who's a great baker and pastry chef up in Seattle. And the first month we were open at the Four Seasons, we did almost $250,000 in banquet business only. That's not even the restaurant. And I was sleeping 2 hours a night, getting up at 4 a.m. I'd go and pick up Susan and Leslie, and I finally totaled my car one night because I just fell asleep, you know, behind the wheel. But it was a great time. It was very exciting to be out there. I remember Joan Collins was sitting on the other side of the kitchen right there eating away, and it was fun. I did clash with the general manager at the time, Mr. Ferraro. He wanted the banquets to be French served, and you know what that means. The waiter comes over with a tray of 10 veal chops, and another waiter comes with a platter of green beans, and you drop the veal chop down and the green beans. And I said, no. I said, I want the cooks in the kitchen to plate the food because it's way more beautiful. What we can do on a plate and then send it out is way, way more beautiful. And interestingly, after I left, they're still doing it my way.
In 1989, Lydia returned to Boston and opened Biba, which fittingly stood for Back in Boston Again. She pushed the limits of acceptability for Boston diners at Biba and found great success, taking home the James Beard Award for Best Chef Northeast in 1992.
When I opened Biba, the downstairs was a bar, and I wanted a bar food menu. And I love scallion pancakes, and there was one restaurant, a real dive, a hole in the wall in Boston, in Chinatown. And this man was from the north, where, of course, the scallion pancakes are a northern, more Mandarin dish. And he was from the north. He was actually in the army. He was a kind of an older chef at the time. And my Chinese girlfriend asked him if he would teach me the recipe, and he said, sure, come over on my one day off, which was whatever, Wednesday, I can't remember. And I knocked on the door at 12:30, the time that I was supposed to be there, and my Chinese friend had not shown up yet. So he opened the door, and I went in, and we can't speak because he can't speak English. And so, you know, I'm just looking at him and smiling, and all of a sudden he grabs me, and he starts feeling me up. And I said to myself, well, wait a minute, Lydia. What do you want more? Do you want the scallion pancake recipe, or do you mind if he has a couple of cheap feels? So I said, I think I'm going to live with the cheap feels. It was a great space. It was overlooking the public gardens in Boston, so it was literally front and center. I mean, you could look out our front windows and see the Ritz-Carlton across the way, and the Four Seasons Hotel was right next to me. So we were in the best spot. And I interviewed six architects and decided on Adam Tahani. And to this day, I think there's no greater an architect than Adam Tahani. And he had another architect working with him, Rafael Alvarez, who actually designed Scampo, my restaurant I have right now. So you kind of stick with the best when you find them. And it was just a big, fun place. It was 7,600 square feet. You know, we had 200 people that could sit upstairs and 51 downstairs in the bar. I had two bars. I always wanted a little bar for single travelers to be able to sit where they wouldn't feel strange. And that was upstairs. And that was right across from our wood-burning oven. On the menu, I had a whole offal section, O-F-F-A-L. And, you know, again, I thought that Boston is such a gateway and we have so many travelers who probably want a piece of calf's liver or calf's brains and, you know, where would they get them in Boston? So we became known for that. And I think pretty much I was the first chef of that nature to have a whole offal section on the menu. So that was back in 1989 when we opened. Biba, after 13 and a half years, needed a redo, like most restaurants. And so I took on two partners, Tim Lynch from Grill 23 in Boston, a very famous steakhouse in Boston, and Ken Hemmel. And we morphed Biba into Excelsior, and we sunk a lot of money into it. We built a beautiful glass wine tower in the restaurant. And, you know, it was gorgeous, really gorgeous. And Adam Tahani did it again. And then my relationship with Ken Hemmel fell apart. It is what it is. And we all moved on. And I was very involved with Lockober, which was my restaurant for 10 years. The owner of the property that Lockober was sitting in, that was it. Our lease was over.
After Biba fell apart, Lydia went on to open other restaurants, including Blue Sky in York Beach and the award-winning Scampo, where she still cooks today. She's also the culinary director for Town Stove and Spirits. Lydia is famous for her love of fat, and she isn't shy about it.
You know, I'm definitely a carnivore. You know, we don't cut any fat off. You know, and fat is key. We buy the most amazing pork from Heritage Foods USA. It's the best I've ever had in my life. And, you know, we cook it with skin on, you know, the pork rack. He just sent me one the other day for a very VIP party I was cooking for. And these pigs that he has are raised, you know, for their tenderness and their flavor and the fat content. And I think it's shocking the amount of, I call it abuse, that butchers now in America and supermarkets, what they're doing to meat, they're just ripping all the fat off. You can't even cook it. It's not good. You know, I believe you have to have, obviously, a balanced diet, and I don't suggest you have fat at every meal, but, you know, there are times when you just need fat.
Lydia sees Boston as a culinary community unto its own, and is proud to represent the often overlooked city.
I think the best cook in Boston when I was growing up was definitely Monsef Medeb. He was the originator of L'Espalier in Boston. And he just was one amazing cook. I was working at the Copley Plaza then, and I just called him up one night, and I invited him over to have a drink with me at the end of the night. And he came over, and I really had never met him before, and we sat down and talked. He was from Northern Africa, and just an amazing cook. Once again, there's that beauty of Boston. You know, we're little. You could just be spontaneous with another chef, and it worked. I would like to be remembered as a colorful person. You see, I have my red scarf on today, my red pocketbook. I would like to be remembered as somebody who, A, number one, whose big mission in life was top quality. No question about it. I mean, that's what I strive for all the time. And I feel I've done that and I've grasped it. And I'm very proud of that.
This piece was produced by Aaron Fairbanks and Jack Inslee for HeritageRadioNetwork.org, with additional research by Nathaniel Coburn. The songs used in this piece are Quick by Dane Chadwick, Leng by Andy Petter and Peter Boothroyd, One-Eyed None Such by Ball Flame Shoot Fire, It Ain't Hard to Tell by the California Honey Drops, Nine Haiku by Eric Maltz, Feel Some Bodies by Hard Bodies, All Nighter by Morph Ground, Diamond Head by OL, No Friday by Space Ghost, Grey Goose by Tom Cruise, and again, Quick by Dane Chadwick. Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.